Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And unfortunately, our streak has come to an end. So we had quite a few episodes there, back to back to back, where we had the whole crew here together for you. But today, we are down one. We're down a man. We're going to pour out a little liquor for our man, Miles Gorham, this evening. As Miles is traveling up, I believe it's to Duluth, Minnesota. I don't know where that is. It sounds like a made-up place to me, but that's where Miles is going to get the final preparation done for his wedding. As Saturday, Miles will officially say goodbye to single life, even though that's technically already been done, and will join myself in the married category, and we'll be able to give JR some tips here over the next year as JR finishes up the planning for his upcoming nuptials. So wherever you are, if you have a drink in your hand, just pour out a little for our man Miles. You're not gonna hear his voice for the next, I believe it's 2 weeks, and we're gonna see if that Wi-Fi works in Mexico, but we're probably not gonna hear from Miles for 2 weeks. So with that out of the way, we'll go ahead and slide right along to, you know, the man, the myth, the legend, the flag football all-time quarterback, JR. What's going on, my man?
What's going on, man? Shout out to my man, Miles. You know, Friday will be an exact year from my wedding, so I'm excited. And I know things will be great for Miles. And, you know, good luck, man. We miss you. If you're listening, I know you will. Good luck and congratulations.
All right. And moving right along to the man whose wedding will not be happening in a year. No, definitely not in a year. Saxy Prince. What's going on with you, man?
Yeah, the wedding for me is very, 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 very far out. But obviously shout out to Miles, and you know, I'm a marriage kind of guy, so I definitely love seeing couples be happy, getting together, be married, making that lifetime commitment. So I did try to get Miles to come out one time, you know, before he got married, but you know, I'm like Miles is like Teddy, and I'm like Captain Munderland, and I'm trying to get him to come out and have a good time and whatnot. So
you're trying to get Miles and them Fred Smoot type of troubles. We can't have that. Not that kind of trouble.
But like I said, we miss Miles. You know, we'll miss him on the show for next couple weeks. But yeah, that being said, you know, because we are in the arena of love and whatnot, and I wanted to pose my random question of the day. Who was, or maybe who currently is, you guys' celebrity crush? Like, who is it that, like, man, if this is the one person my significant other gives me permission to go off on a weekend getaway with, like, who is your celebrity crush?
Well, you go first with these every time, man.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if a lot of people know who she is. Mine is Marina Baccarin. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Deadpool, but she was a love interest in that movie. If you ever watched the TV show, older TV show, Firefly, she was the companion. She played Inara. Yeah, man, she's like, I think she's like Puerto Rican, maybe? Think maybe. Hold on, I got this. I have it pulled up already. So come on, she's Brazilian. She's Brazilian.
Right, so you just had it pulled up before we started recording.
Very beautiful, man. Speed. It's like it's equivalent to speed dial. I got this girl bookmarked. So yeah, that's who mine is.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Umar Johnson is not gonna be very happy about that. But you know, we'll slide over it.
He is Brazilian. She is Brazilian. So I think I get a pass, Dr. Umar.
Okay, JR, how about you, man?
So I really have two. Y'all already know one because I put her in a group like every week. So I know a lot of people don't know her, which is fine. Her name is Bernice Burgos. I'm absolutely love her. She's everything. I'd do anything in this world to meet her. For those of you that have never heard of her, just Google her and you won't forget her. I promise. The other is Lauren London. If you haven't seen the movie ATL, I highly encourage you to go and watch that. She's the one reason I do watch ATL and can never get enough of it. So Bernice Burgos and Lauren London are my top two.
All right. And I guess I'll wrap things up here with mine, you know, oldie but a goodie, taking you back to Love and Basketball. Miss Sanaa Lathan will be mine.
Who's getting younger as the years go on.
You know, yeah, we do that sometimes.
It's black very don't strange. Crack, baby.
It's very strange how that happens. But yeah, Sanaa Lathan would be the one where I get a pass from the wife. But, you know, haven't made that trip out to L.A. to go searching just yet. You know, happily held down up here in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So now that we got that out the way, we're going to jump into a little bit of the sports talk real quick. Talk about some of the things that have been going on, some of the things that I've seen my man JR out there fighting the good fight on Twitter about. So, JR, what are your thoughts on kind of what's been going down in the summer league? LeVar Ball balled out, you know, in some not big baller brand shoes. Yeah, what's going on in the summer league? What should we be paying attention to?
You know, there's a good battle going on right now between De'Aaron Fox and Dennis Smith Jr. Dennis Smith Jr. is killing it right now. I believe he was up. He had like 15 points when we started recording the pod, and De'Aaron Fox hadn't scored yet. So, you know, he's winning that battle right now. And everybody knows DSJ was my biggest draft crush pre-draft of the NBA draft just because I love his mentality and I love his game. But both of those guys have really been playing exceptionally well, along with Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, who's been playing probably the best out of anybody in summer league. And, you know, everybody gave Danny Ainge a whole lot of flack for, you know, trading back and not taking Fultz. But right now Tatum's looking like the better player and the better fit for their team. And he should be a really nice addition with them at that three spot, along with Isaiah Thomas, and with them now signing Gordon Hayward. It'll be a nice piece for them to go alongside Jaylen Brown as well. Markel Fultz has looked good as well. Suffered an injury the other night, ankle injury. They're holding him out for the rest of summer league. But to this point, or when he was playing, he looked really good. Brandon Ingram was another guy that looked good for the Lakers. And Lonzo Ball had a really good coming out party last night, took over the game last night and got the win over the 76ers. I think he ended up with 36 points, I believe it was. And he made the go-ahead layup. It was an and one to put him up by one to secure the game. So that's the game he really needed, because a lot of people were criticizing him because he hadn't really had that breakout game like these other guys were showing. But, you know, it was really good to see him break out like that and show the scoring ability that he is capable of. And a lot of people don't really understand that he's not a pure scorer like some of these other guys that were drafted ahead of him and behind him. He's more of a passer and a distributor. He's more of a pass-first point guard as opposed to a score-first guy like these other guys. So, and they play here in about an hour. They play against the Cavaliers. So it'll be interesting to see if he can build off that strong performance from last night.
When you guys watch, and you know, we've had some conversations about this in previous pods and kind of offline and stuff. When you're watching a point guard play for you, what gets you more hyped up? A point guard that's just kind of controlling the floor, making those crazy passes with the vision, stuff we see LeBron do sometimes, stuff we used to see Magic do? Or you guys get more charged up for like the, you know, the score first point guard that's breaking guys down off the dribble? Yinka, we'll lead it off with you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely used to appreciate more so the point guard that would kind of control the floor. I don't know, but maybe it's just the equivalent to what we've seen with the NFL with the down to the field passes. I've just loved watching the takeover point guards, you know, the Kyrie Irvings and Steph Currys, like watching those guys really just, you know, it's time to go. Like they're down, you know, down 7 points, and that point guard is the one that's taking over. They're not always trying to find, you know, the small forward or the superstar to do it. And I've just enjoyed watching, honestly, I've enjoyed watching guys like Kyrie and Curry operate than I have like LeBron or Kevin Durant or any of these other guys who actually are superstars. And, you know, when I look at my team, Minnesota, that's kind of what I'm hoping for, you know, that we eventually get to that point where a guy either comes in or, you know, we draft a guy that has the ability to just take over games. So that's what I'm looking at.
Well, Jeff Teague is not that guy.
He is not that guy.
You will have to look to the future for that. But, JR, how about you, man? What kind of point guard do you typically prefer if you were building your team?
Well, you know, I'm a big basketball guy, but a lot of people have to understand that there's different types of point guards. And I kind of – there's a new age of point guard. And, you know, guys like John Wall, Kyrie, Westbrook, Steph Curry, I think they kind of mess it up for a lot of people. And what I mean by that is people only look at point guards as being able to control the game by being a score-first guy and not how it was back in the day with a Magic Johnson or like a Jason Kidd, somebody that can completely control the game without necessarily being a score-first guard. And I think you can win in the NBA with a score for, with a pass-first guard, but in order to win championships, I think you have to have a score-first guy. So I think those kind of new-age guys have kind of messed up the perspective of it because we all know basketball is about entertainment, and that's what Steph Curry is the definition of. So everybody thinks that point guards have to be score-first guys when they don't necessarily have to be to control a game. But, I mean, I like Lonzo Ball. I like all these new point guards that are in the game right now. But you just have to look at it from a different perspective and understand the type of point guard that you're looking at. And don't necessarily – a point guard doesn't necessarily have to be a score-first guy in order to take over a game. And that's why a lot of people didn't really like Ricky Rubio in Minnesota because they didn't feel like he could take over a game by being a scorer, which is not necessarily his game. He's a pure distributor. So you just have to understand the type of point guard that you're looking at and how they can take over games in different ways.
So with a guy like that, like Alonzo Ball, like a Ricky Rubio type, you know, to some degree, even like a CP3 guy who's, you know, has that great vision and can control the game by getting other guys involved. I mean, it almost, and I don't want to go back and rehash all this and kind of, you know, open up those wounds again, but with the kind of team they're building in a place like Minnesota, where, you know, you have scorers and guys who really need the ball, can that type of point guard work in the NBA if you have, you know, a bunch of shooters on your team, or you just have the guy who's making sure everyone's getting their shots, keeping everybody involved?
It's funny that you say that because I kind of compare pass first point guards to quarterbacks that need to be surrounded by a lot of weapons in order to win. So let's take a Rajon Rondo, for example, who won a championship in Boston. And we all know he's not a score first point guard. He's exclusively a distributor. He's not a guy that will ever have a consistent jump shot in his career. I mean, he's been in the league for 10 plus years now. And he just hasn't developed a consistent shot to date. And we all know it's not going to happen to this point just because he's been in the league so long and it hasn't come to him yet. So Lonzo's a much better scorer than what Rondo is, but I don't think he'll ever be that 20-plus a game scorer like a John Wall is or a Russell Westbrook or anybody like that. He's more of a distributor. And, you know, the pre-draft comp to him was Jason Kidd, and I think that is spot on because Jason Kidd wasn't really a good scorer coming into the league, but he developed it as his game further went along and as he got older in the league. And I think that that's something I could see Lonzo doing. But back to the football perspective, you take a guy like Kirk Cousins, for an example, who has to be surrounded by weapons. And I'm not saying the Redskins can win the Super Bowl, but I think they can have a playoff run, so to speak. And it won't be because of Kirk Cousins, but I think it could be by the – it can be due to the weapons that he's surrounded by. So I think it's a similar situation comparing the NBA point guard and, you know, a quarterback that needs to be surrounded by weapons.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the next thing I wanted to talk about from a sporting perspective, it's taken over Twitter. It's taken over the social media landscape. It's building up now where it's going to be maybe the biggest event of the summer because we are in that point of the year where, you know, things are kind of dead right now. So really anything that gives us entertainment, anything that gives us hype in the sporting world gets a lot of attention. And it's the Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather fight. And, you know, we joked around very early in this whole process and said this fight was going to bring out the very worst in people and in America. And I want to get y'all's take on kind of where we're at so far with the hype and how the fight's being hyped and what your thoughts are on how things will ultimately go once they get in the ring. Yinka, we'll lead off with you on this one. Or maybe we won't, Yinka. It's kind of early for the internet to have cut you off. I see you here on the screen, but I can't hear you, so we'll slide over to JR and hope you come back at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Well, I haven't watched any of the press conferences to date, but I've seen some of the press clippings on Twitter and some of the you know, back and forth bickering that they've done to this point. And I mean, I'm interested in the fight, yes, but all this pre-fight stuff I'm not really interested in. I kind of just want to see the guys fight. And I mean, we know who's going to win unless Conor brings the MMA rules into the equation. He has no chance at all, none at all. I think Floyd's going to win single-handedly. It's going to go all 12 just because Floyd's not the guy who knocks out guys. He's going to outfight you and, you know, just duck and dodge his way to a victory and pick and choose when he can land his punches very wisely. And that's just his fighting style. So it's going to go all 12, and I think Floyd will win unanimously.
Yeah, and I get that they're out there, and I get that they're selling a fight. But and I know that often what happens when we get into this, people will be like, oh, but he's Irish, things are different. But I feel like it's a pattern now with Conor where, like, whenever he's fighting, and I'm not going to say Floyd is any better, so I don't want people thinking that I'm riding for Floyd. Both these dudes are kind of assholes, so I don't really know how you really pick one to say he's my guy and I'm going to cheer for him. But Conor really, in the last few of his fights, is riding the line or probably stepped over the line where he's stepped into, you know, the racist aspect of things a little bit, you know, calling Floyd boy all the time, telling them to dance for him, referring to, you know, the boxers and Rocky as dancing monkeys and stuff. Like, there's some lines there that he's crossing. And I understand, you know, given the history of fighting in America, and, you know, the quote unquote, you know, great white hype and how fights used to be sold back in the day. But to a degree, it seems like just giving him a pass on a lot of this really kind of over the line stuff that he is saying and behavior that, yeah, if a black person did that, they might not get the same passes as Conor's getting right now. I guess Prince, are you back? I see you moving around. What are your thoughts on all this?
Conor McGregor's going to die. I think it's going to be very clear that he is probably going to be edited by Floyd Mayweather. But yeah, I mean, the appeal with a guy like Conor McGregor is, you know, he is that kind of like, he puts on the persona of just being tough as nails. He'll take any hit, but he'll keep getting up and keep fighting back, all that stuff. And I think that's what the appeal is with some people, and really want to see, he's clearly the underdog in this fight. And I think that's what the appeal is for wanting him to, you know, overcome a guy who is 49-0 coming out of retirement in order to fight him. But I've watched some of Conor McGregor's last couple of fights, and he hasn't necessarily looked the same as when he was, when he kind of rose to, you know, that prime fighting that he was at. And that was in the MMA. So bringing into the fact that he can't use leverage the same way in boxing as you can in MMA, he's at a very high and steep disadvantage in this fight. But yeah, like, the things that he's saying, I understand is therefore the promotional and to create this level of tension, but there is certain aspects where it is starting to get a little bit too much, and he's going a little bit too far.
It doesn't seem necessary either. I mean, we're at a point right now where you don't really need that to sell the fight. Like, it's already going to be the event of the summer. Sell the fight. I mean, there's enough material out there about Floyd that you can get at Floyd without telling him to dance for you and calling him a boy and all the other stuff. So that was the only thing that I was saying. I guess, Jared, do you have any final thoughts? I know you are a resident kind of fight fan in here. And I mean, I know people are going to say, and as I said in the beginning, I am not riding for Floyd. I know Floyd is also an asshole and has used very similar techniques and tactics in the past to sell fights when he was fighting, you know, Hispanic fighters back in the day. But we're in one of those situations where I'm not going to say because one person did something wrong, the other person should do something wrong. So I just wanted to get that out the way. And I'll give you the last word on this topic, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a little bit over the line, what he's doing. And I think if the roles were reversed, I think it would be a bigger issue than what is currently being stated right now. But, I mean, it is what it is at this point. And they're doing what they have to do to sell the fight. And, I mean, everybody knows who's going to win. Let's be honest. I'll be completely shocked if McGregor wins, but stranger things have happened. We saw the guy beat Pacquiao the other day, and their faces look completely different from one another. So anything can happen, and like I said, I'll watch the fight. I'll be interested in the fight, and I mean, I expect Floyd to win pretty comfortably, and I'll be extremely shocked if he doesn't.
I mean, the smart play is for Floyd to lose this one. make all the money on that rematch, and then you get a trilogy out of it. I mean, that's a smart play. I don't think he'll give up, you know, that zero in the record. But if they're trying to max out the money, Floyd got to go down.
Yeah, he trademarked 50-0 before the fight, so we'll see if it happens.
All right. Well,
does he need any more money at this point, though? Isn't he worth like $200 million?
I mean, the IRS is calling.
Pay them taxes, man.
IRS is calling. We don't know.
Pay them taxes.
Tax man start coming for you. You know, you always could use some more money. But
that's true.
With that said, we go. You know, it is the time of year, so I guess we got to go ahead and do what folks who talk about football do it around this time of year. We need to talk about training camp. What's going on? Our man JR has been blessing us here with daily drops of, position group previews for training camp. So turn it over to you, JR, and you can lead us in, tell us a little bit about your series, and then, you know, get us into the conversation about what you're going to be watching as we get into training camp.
Yeah, so on climbingthepocket.com, just check it out if you haven't. I've been talking about each and every position group at this point, quarterbacks, running backs, and tight ends so far. And just giving quick little bios and synopsis on each player at each position. Just giving you an in-depth look maybe about some players that you didn't know about, whether it's a rookie or undrafted guy or a guy that they signed off the street. Just making sure you're prepared for everything going to training camp. And maybe some notable names that you knew already. And I try to include some notes about them and interesting nuggets that I find throughout the year, or, you know, throughout research that I find with those guys, and just giving an outlook on the position. And, you know, I did quarterbacks on Tuesday, I believe it was. Wednesday, I did running backs. And today, I did the tight ends. You know, all of them are interesting groups. I would say quarterback is the least interesting out of all of the groups because, I mean, we already know it's going to be the starter there. Running back is a monster right now. And, you know, it'll be between Latavius Murray, Dalvin Cook, and Jerick McKinnon. We really don't know. If we were to draw a pie chart and split the carries, you really don't know how it would be at this point. That's one of the most fascinating position battles entering training camp. And tight end, after Kyle Rudolph, is pretty much a toss-up. We know David
Moore. Can we pause on running back real quick before you get into the tight end position there? Rumor has it that you were taking subliminal shots at one Saxy Prince when the original version of your running back article dropped, and a certain aged running back was not even mentioned. No ink was spilled mentioning Saxy Prince's favorite all-time player, Adrian Peterson. Would you like to address the beef with Saxy Prince on this podcast?
Yeah, so it was a subliminal shot. I did it on purpose to see if Yinka would notice. And what I did was I have a additions and subtractions portion of the article, and Adrian Peterson was left off the subtractions part, and his name wasn't even mentioned in any part of the article. I'm just kidding. There was just a bad mistake by me, and I forgot to include Adrian Peterson, but I'm going to cover it up as a mistake. But really, it was a subliminal shot at Yinka to see if he would notice.
I'm hurt, JR. I'm hurt. You know what AP has done for this league and how he is clearly in the best shape of his life. And he's going to return to dominance and return to that 4-4 speed that we knew him to be able to do in Oklahoma. But in all seriousness, I wouldn't be surprised if he got cut by the Saints. I'm just saying. Whoa. And he makes his way back to Minnesota.
Whoa.
Make his way back to Minnesota.
Whoa.
A one-day contract?
You can hit us with the double hot take.
A one-day contract?
AP getting cut. From the Saints, they not even.
I didn't say he was gonna play for Minnesota. I'm just saying he might make his way back sooner rather than later.
They're not even gonna let the man play the Tim Hightower role. They're just gonna cut him outright. Okay, you heard it here first.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, not to dwell on the AP thing, but I mean, I know they brought over AP obviously to, to do what AP does, and AP still does have something left in the tank. I think the appeal for Adrian Peterson when he was coming out, he had a good mix between power and explosion. You know, he had that speed that he could to be able to bounce it to the outside and all that stuff. I think where his value still is he needs to accept fully you don't have that speed anymore. You barely have that explosion and accept that you are now our power runner, and you can still make the end of your career still look pretty decent if you accept the role as a power runner. But until he accepts that, I mean, we're going to see him get stopped in the backfield because he wants to still think, I got that 4-4 speed. I can bounce it to the outside, or, you know, I can make certain cuts that I used to be able to do. Can't do that no more. Just be a power back.
To segue it back to the Vikings, I mean, if we're being real, and I think if the Saints are deploying their weapons in a way that makes the most sense based on who they have, Adrian Peterson is Latavius Murray for the Saints. I mean, that's how I see him. He's going to be their guy that when they get to the goal in the red zone, they need to not get, punch it in the goal line, short yardage. It's Adrian Peterson. Even though Mark Ingram, if you look at them statistically over the last few seasons, has been a better or more efficient, I'll say, running back than Adrian Peterson. I think Mark Ingram gets the early down work. Kamara gets eased into the passing game, and Adrian Peterson, as you said, is their power back.
Yeah, and that's actually great that you mentioned that, because when I was somewhat advocating for being okay with Adrian Peterson still being on this roster, it was to accept that Latavius Murray, Matt Asiata type role. You know, like, he still has value as that power back, and you can still, you know, use that to your advantage. Just obviously don't put him 25 times a game in the dot and expect to, you know, have a solid efficient run game. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that take.
You know who he is? Do y'all remember T.J. Duckett that played for the Falcons?
Man, you know I remember T.J. Duckett.
That's who Adrian Peterson is now.
That's a damn shame. All right, well, since we've completely derailed your training camp preview, JR, bring us back. You were talking about the running backs and then transitioning into the tight end position. Give us your thoughts on the tight end position, what you found, and then let us know what you got coming up next.
Yeah, so the tight end position is really intriguing. We know Kyle Rudolph will be the top guy, but after that, it's pretty much a toss-up. We know David Morgan, we know what he is and who he will be. He's an inline blocker. He's mostly a run-blocking tight end. But that number two spot to be the receiving tight end behind Rudolph is really a toss-up. Bucky Hodges is clearly the favorite right now. Jason's guy, I know, he's fist-pumping right now as we speak. He's pretty much the favorite amongst Viking faithful for Mr. Mankato right now. So he has a lot to live up to in his first training camp. I was looking up some numbers at Pro Football Focus yesterday. They really compared him to Jimmy Graham. That was the biggest comparison for Bucky Hodges. And you see a lot of similarities because both aren't really natural route runners and both really rely on their catch radiuses and to win one-on-one matchups. And that's what Bucky did at Virginia Tech. So I'm really interested to see how he progresses and how he does in training camp and if he stands out in preseason games and really how Shermer uses him in the preseason as well. That could really, you know, give us an indicator or show us how he could use him during the season as well. So Bucky Hodges is really a name that I'll be looking forward to seeing in preseason games and as the season goes along.
Man, and what I'm really, really hoping is that we don't get to preseason and see a look where we see Bucky and Rudolph both in line at tight end with David Morgan in the backfield at fullback or something, because I might break a remote. Like, I feel like if you get a guy like Bucky Hodges and you bring him to your roster, just like the Saints did with Jimmy Graham, figure out ways to maximize what he does well versus trying to turn him into something that he isn't. Like, maximize strengths versus trying to turn weaknesses into strengths, because we know that very rarely happens in the NFL.
Right. Don't make him Red Ellison. Treat him as an extra receiver, and that's really what I hope they do with him.
I would agree.
And so after you get through the tight ends, JR, what's the next position group you're going to get us through?
Yeah, so I'm going to continue working through offense. Receivers will come out tomorrow. You know, that's the diva position. A lot of interesting guys at that spot. And, you know, that sixth wide receiver spot, I think, is up in the air. You know, they drafted two rookies in Stacy Coley and Rodney Adams, so I think I have a really good chance at making it. One of the two is going to make the final roster, I think. One of them's going to be on the outside looking in. And, you know, Yinka's guy, Jarius Wright, I think it's one of the biggest years of his career. I think it's a make-or-break year for him as far as making the roster. And, you know, he's a guy that they like to play throughout the preseason. He was one of the few veterans that did play in the fourth preseason game last year. So, and I think they'll treat him the same this year. So I'm really interested to see how he progresses as the year goes along as well and if he can create a role for himself in the Vikings' deep receiving corps.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So as we start to move along, and like you said, Bucky Hodges, some of the receivers are the people that you're going to be looking at as we get into training camp. Yinka, I know that at some point you'll probably be out there with some live coverage. Who are you going to be looking at? Like, who are the players that you're most excited to watch and will be kind of scouring the highlight film for a footage of as we get through training camp?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be keeping my eye on Bucky Hodges a little bit. I think I've talked about the Will linebacker position. Edmund Robinson is somebody that I really want to watch. I just want to see where he, you know, if he does take that step forward, can he really seize that Will linebacker role? But also, I think I was somewhat critical of the, I want to say it was Ben Gideon pick. So I guess I want to see how he progresses and see if I can, you know, find some of that athleticism that a lot of people had told me about, because I didn't see it when I watched him necessarily on the tape. But granted, you know, there was, I'm forgetting his name right now. Michigan guy.
JR, can you help him out?
Yeah, remind me right now. Picked by the Browns. Why am I forgetting him?
Jabril Peppers.
Jabril Peppers. Yeah, so yeah, obviously I do want to see where, you know, where he progresses as far as I know a lot of people had said, you know, he was really athletic and maybe they'll be able to use that athleticism. But those are two guys that I'm definitely going to be watching out. I'm also going to be watching another guy, Jayron Kearse. He's an anomaly because, you know, he didn't really play that well in his final season at Clemson. You saw him take some bad angles and not play very well in his first year of the Vikings. I want to see if he can take that step forward. I don't have super high hopes, but I'm definitely hoping that he can take that step forward. Not necessarily to overtake Andrew Sandejo, but just to see if he can, you know, become more of a reliable piece in case one of those guys go down. Because I mean, it has been a few seasons. Harrison Smith hasn't made it through a full season in a couple of years, actually. So I do want to see if he, you know, if Harrison goes down and Sandejo goes down, can he step into that role for, you know, a game or two? And then I think my last guy, I think I want to see what's happening at the D tackle spot. You know, I want to see what's happening with Will Sutton. I do want to see Jaleel Johnson work. Tom Johnson, is Tom Johnson currently injured right now, or he's coming off injury, excuse me. So I want to see what those are kind of like the three main spots I'm going to be paying attention to.
And I'm glad that you mentioned D tackle, because I'm going to flip over to the other side. And what I'm really interested to see is how, you know, Elflein does hold up now that they get to go full bore and he's up there, you know, every day going head to head with Linval, and how he deals with that transition, dealing with, you know, NFL D tackles coming at him with pads on and how he's able to hold up. And then I'm also really interested to see how the new offensive line starts to gel and come together. I mean, obviously it's, you know, it's training camp. Obviously the pass protection, you know, is a little different because, you know, the quarterback still gets to step up and make the pass regardless of what's happening there. But very interested to see how that group really starts to come together. And even though it'll be limited snaps, be interested to see what they look like once we do get into preseason. And then the other thing that I'll be, I guess, quietly looking for, maybe not so quietly, during the highlight videos is how many of the receiver highlights come at the expense of my man Trey Waynes. Because Trey Waynes makes me hella nervous. Mackenzie Alexander, obviously, in the slot make me nervous, just given the way we start the season. So the thing that I know that a lot of people will be looking at when, you know, the highlights come out is, you know, oh, Diggs roasted so-and-so, or, you know, Treadwell went up over such-and-such. But if we keep seeing that those people are the starters that aren't named Xavier Rhodes, that'll have me a little shook as we get into the season.
I'm really hoping they sign a veteran corner, maybe a guy like a Leon Hall. That's a name that I've floated out there a lot, a guy that has experience with Mike Zimmer and a guy that's proven in this league. So I tweeted out earlier that our corner depth really scares me. I know we have one of the better secondaries in the NFL, but I still think we have a lot of guys that are unproven. And you're talking about guys like Jabari Price or Trey Roberson that can really make the roster, and that really scares me just because those guys, they haven't shown anything to this point. Roberson is transitioning from quarterback, And, you know, Jabari Price, you can't really count on him just because he's been suspended as well. So, and he hasn't really shown anything to this point since being drafted. So, I mean, I'm really nervous about the secondary, the corners, I should say. They really make me nervous outside of Xavier Rhodes and Terrence Newman.
Yeah, right there with you, man. Right there with you. But the other group, actually, especially coming off last year, and I mentioned them already, but the offensive line, and because we're fans and we can't help ourselves, you know, we hate Pro Football Focus. We think they're the worst in the world. They don't know the play calls. They don't know what they're doing until they say something nice about us. And then once they say something nice about us, we love Pro Football Focus. They're our favorite people. Eric is the man. Look at all these great graphics that his people are putting out. And so most Viking fans, or many Viking fans, seem to be a little nervous about things going into this, you know, next season with the guys we picked up. You know, most people were saying Riley Reiff is okay, Mike Remmers is okay, we should have an okay offensive line. And then Pro Football Focus said we are going to be a little bit above average. And the narrative seems to have switched where, you know, our offensive line is going to be good. Dalvin's about to run for 1,800 yards. Like, you know, this offense is going to another level with things here. And actually, on another podcast I was listening to, Warren Sharp, who does amazingly good work, he was saying that actually Minnesota, with the changes that they've made on their offensive line and the defenses that we'll be facing, that we have the biggest change from last year to this year in terms of how bad and how difficult things were for running the ball last year to how easy they should be for us this year. And so I guess my question that I had for you guys after that ridiculously long lead-in was, do y'all think that the offensive line is going to live up to these now seemingly lofty expectations that are getting thrown out there based on the pieces that we've added? JR, I'll start with you.
You know, our tackle situation makes me very nervous. Everybody knows how I feel about Mike Remmers, you know, being from North Carolina and seeing a whole bunch of Panthers games, excuse me. The faithful hated him down here just because he cost them so many points last year. And I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but I'm sure he was very high on offensive linemen with penalties. I'm sure he was at the top of the list. He had so many false start penalties. And I really don't know what the cause was of that, but I don't know. Everybody likes to bring up the Super Bowl against Von Miller, how he really struggled. That burns my eyes watching that. And, you know, that thought is just in the back of my head every time I think of Mike Remmers. But run blocking, he's really solid from the film that I've seen. And I think that's where he's going to have to make his money at. I don't think he's a overly great pass rusher. He's a guy that, you know, you can throw in there and be fine and get you through a game, but over a season, he kind of really worries me. And I'm not so sure about this Riley Reiff thing, guys. And, you know, the reasoning for that is because when Riley Reiff was at left tackle, they ended up drafting Taylor Decker and moved him over to right tackle. So what does that really say about Reiff as a left tackle? And that's the thought that just keeps coming back into my head. I hope he plays well. I like Riley Reiff. And, you know, it doesn't get any worse than T.J. Clemens and his performance last season. So anything was an upgrade. But just because we signed Riley Reiff, I don't think that's, I would say, an immediate solution or for the future. I still think they should keep upgrading the tackle spots due to it being a deep draft. And, you know, I'm really going to be keen on those guys during the preseason because, you know, we offensive line is what really cost us last year down the stretch. And, you know, the injuries at that position. So I'm really going to be interested to see how they gel, especially those two guys and how they fit in. And, you know, Alex Boone is another guy. I thought he had a solid year last year. You know, a lot of people were down on him, but a lot of people have to understand that he was confiscated for so many mistakes that was around him, you know, at center, at left tackle, and the mess that was around him. And it kind of made him look bad just because he was trying to cover for their mistakes. But now he has, you know, a guy that's supposed to be an immediate starter, I think, and Pat Elflein, and, you know, don't believe Coach Zimmer about this camp battle between Nick Easton and Pat Elflein. I'd be shocked if Pat Elflein wasn't the day one starter at center, and, you know, we signed Reiff. So he has two good pieces surrounding him. So I expect better out of Alex Boone this season as well. So it'll be interesting to see these two tackles and Elflein as well.
So one of the things that we have talked about with the offensive line before we slide over to Yinka here is that, you know, with Cook and with Shermer, we expect to go to a little bit more of a zone blocking type of scheme. From what you've seen of the guys that we have that are projected to start, so, you know, Remmers, Berger, Elfline, Boone, Reef. How do they fit in that? Do they have, because typically you think of zone, you think of very kind of agile, mobile type of linemen. How do they fit, or do you think we'll be running some kind of a different scheme or a hybrid of some sort? And I'll leave this one off with Saxy Prince, and then we slide it back to JR to wrap us up.
Yeah, I am worried as far as the athleticism for them to be able to handle the, you know, to do a complete zone blocking. I still think that the offense line is going a little bit in the transition, so they are wanting to probably move towards more of a zone blocking, but it definitely is going to be more of that hybrid. I do think we still see some power power run plays that's going to happen. I think that's what's going to – you're going to see a lot of Latavius Murray in those situations. But back to, I guess, as far as the expectations, I guess it all depends on what your expectations are. I barely think this unit is going to get to average, but I think that that's kind of what the hope is, because we've been honestly trashing the offensive line since 2012 was the last time we had a really good offensive line. And even then it was somewhat suspect. But no, I think the interior is not where my worry is. I do like the move where TJ Clemmings getting some work on the inside where he doesn't – basically, if he doesn't have a side of him exposed, that will definitely, I think, help him in his development and stuff. And, you know, maybe eventually he does find a way, if he's not with the Vikings, to kick back outside after a few years in the interior. But I'm more on the thinking that it is going to be more of a hybrid type scheme. We're not going to move completely away from the power, and we're also not going to move completely towards the zone blocking, because I just don't think that we have the athleticism just yet to get there. But I think after maybe 2018 draft, we'll probably see more of a complete transition to that zone blocking scheme.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on what the run game is going to look like, JR?
Yeah, so I was looking up some numbers the other day, and the numbers were really bad as far as yards before contact, and nothing was over 1.5 yards, which is really bad. You know, Shermer coming from that Andy Reid coaching tree, he wants to run a lot of zone schemes and, you know, getting guys blocking out in space, and that's what I think he wants to get back to this year. We saw it a lot in Week 17, a lot of outside zone with Jerick McKinnon, and I think that's what he wants to get back to, and I think that's what they will get back to. And that's what Dalvin ran a lot at Florida State. You know, Jimbo's a big guy, big zone scheme guy. So I really hope that's what they run this year. And, you know, I think it's a big year for Pat Shurmur. Me and Jason talk about this all the time. He really has to step his game up as far as putting guys in winnable matchups and, you know, scheming guys in great situations in order to win. So I'm really interested to see how Pat Shurmur does in preseason and during the season as well.
All right, all right, all right. Rapid fire time, gentlemen. Saxy Prince, you have to pick your favorite offensive line group in the league. JR put up a poll. I think the options we had on there were Dallas, the Raiders. For some reason, he put Philadelphia on there. We can talk about that in just a little bit. And then the other option was other. So, Prince, you have to protect your young quarterback. Pick your offensive line.
I feel like the obvious answer is definitely – I think the obvious answer is definitely Dallas. I like all those other units. I kind of almost want to introduce two units that I think are a little bit underrated.
Yeah, we'll get it done, man.
Pittsburgh Steelers, I think their offensive line is definitely underrated, as well as the Washington Redskins. I think that's another underrated unit. I mean, I think Kirk was able to do what he was able to do last year because of, you know, some of the time that he was provided. And the level of play that you saw with that offensive line. So if it's not Dallas, you know, or the Raiders, I think I'm going with, you know, the Steelers or potentially Washington.
Yeah, can't argue with that. JR, how about yourself, man?
I think the obvious choice is the Oakland Raiders. You know, they're loaded at every position outside of right tackle, which is the one position on a lot of offensive lines where they don't necessarily have that star guy. And a lot of teams think you can get by with an average guy there just because you're not protecting the blind side of the quarterback as long as he's not left-handed. But I think another offensive line that I should have put on there that I didn't was the Tennessee Titans. They have a really underrated offensive line. They have Taylor Lewan, Jack Conklin, who had a really good rookie season. And, you know, they have some guys on the interior that are really good as well. So They do a good job of protecting Marcus Mariota. So the Tennessee Titans have a very underrated line, and it's debatable between the Eagles and them who's better. So I like both of them, though. But my obvious choice would be the Oakland Raiders.
Okay, well, I don't have much to add here because, you know, JR took mine. I responded with an other on the poll and put the Tennessee Titans on there, and then, you know, JR went and snatched up all my shine. So I'm just going to keep us rolling right along here. And
Can I mention another potentially underrated? We haven't seen it right just yet, but I think that they're going to be good. The Los Angeles Chargers, I think that they're going to be – I mean, being able to get, obviously, Forrest Lamb and Dan Feeney, obviously, I think they got Russell Okung, too. Did they get Russell Okung as well?
He's okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, even so, just what they've done as far as retooling that offensive line, I think they're going to be an underrated, really good unit.
The Cleveland Browns, too. They did a hell of a job revamping their offensive line.
Yeah, man. Yes, they did. You know, this is a Browns-sponsored podcast. So, you know.
Absolutely.
In Hugh we trust.
Absolutely.
All right, so we kind of teased a little bit that JR's next piece for the training camp preview is going to be about the O-line. Is that all you got in the hopper, or you got anything else out there that you want to let the people know about, JR?
No, I just got receivers and offensive line right now waiting to, you know, be published and go out to you guys. Hopefully you guys have been enjoying everything that I've been putting out so far.
That's awesome, man. And Saxy Prince,
yes, sir.
After the drubbing that you've taken about perceived subliminal shots that you've been taking at Sam Bradford and Pat Shurmur, and I'm not sure who else you managed to catch with them subliminals, but folks are mad at you. How are you going to come back from all this venom that you're what seemed to be a very theoretical article about, you know, how to build on music and verbiage and all that? What you coming back with next to calm the hordes that are charging the gates for you right now, man?
Well, yeah, I mean, I put out my cornerback depth chart today, and so far I looked through the comments, and there were no death threats this time around. So I think that it was a pretty it's a decent group, but obviously we can tell that, you know, if Xavier Rhodes gets injured, if Terrence Newman gets injured, it's very, very it becomes very dicey at the top. So. You go check out my cornerback depth chart. Just put that out today. I also, it was a mini post. Probably not a lot of people saw it. I actually put out, people can start voting in on who they think is Mr. Mankato for this year. They can go on the Daily Norseman, that specific blog post, and just go comment on who you think. I'm going to see if I can compile some of the lists, and then I'm going to send them off to my buddies over at the Strib. The next in line, in my opinion, would probably be offensive line as well, too. I have that somewhat queued up, almost ready to go. So I should be dropping that either tomorrow or Saturday.
Well, that is awesome. You guys definitely keep that amazing content coming for us. I still got some nerdy spreadsheet stuff that I need to do. Just need to find the time to, you know, lock myself in this office with some music and just go through it and try to get this calculator updated, refined, and posted. So that's still what I'm working on. And then also, I think I might just kind of, as an interim article, take a look at kind of historically how guys have performed as rookies versus where, from a fantasy football perspective, guys are being drafted right now, and see if I can call out some places where people might be setting themselves up for some disappointment just based on some of the historical trends, and some places where maybe there's some value that can be found. So probably not gonna post that right away because we're in the middle of a fantasy draft and I don't want to give y'all any help. But that's pretty much what I have next. We've had a couple questions come in from Twitter from some of the guys in the draft. And John wants to know if he's already lost the draft by drafting 5 wide receivers in a row to start. and Ryan wants to know if once he wins the league, if that'll be enough for him to become a regular guest host on the show. What you guys think?
I mean, this is my first dynasty draft as well, so everybody seems to have different philosophies as far as when to pick and what certain position to pick. So it's interesting to see the different philosophies that everyone has. You know, we had a 31-year-old running back go in the third round, I believe it was. So
who would do such a thing? Who would draft an old running back who didn't play in the league?
Only one genius future GM could masterfully put together and secretly be able to take a 31-year-old run back who he knows is going to perform at a very, very high level. And that one person is the one and only Sachs Prince, y'all. I'm good with this.
Yeah, that is true. Yinka is going out of his way to have the oldest team in the league. I think through six rounds, Yinka has Tom Brady, Jordy Nelson, and Marshawn Lynch on the same team as we move through our dynasty startup. So it'll be interesting for Yinka to see how this goes. But I think that's it. I think that's all. You know, the draft is rolling along here. We've touched on the topics we wanted to. Once again, shout out to our man Miles. Congratulations. We will be missing you here for the next, 2 weeks or so, but obviously you have far more important things to attend to. And please,
does again, he though? Does he though?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of does, Yinka. I mean, you're the one on here who's not, locked down.
Yeah, you're right.
He definitely does have more important things to attend to right now. We can't be messing that up for the man.
Hey, can we pull out our Mr. Mankato picks real fast? We got time?
Oh, yeah.
Got time? Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, y'all know mine already. I mean,
Bucky.
Yeah, it's all about Bucky around here, I feel like that's who everyone should want to be Mr. Mankato, because if Bucky balls out, the offense will go to that next level. So, I'm done with the Bucky propaganda. Done enough of that this week. Saxy Prince, who you got, man?
It's your fault, Jason. Like, I wasn't on him as much as I was before your article. But, I don't know. I guess I'm just expecting Bucky Hodges to become Bucky Gronkowski, man. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready for him to just transform this offense in a way that we haven't seen in a while. So, I guess I think my early pick right now would probably be Bucky.
Yeah, man. And JR.
I know y'all can't see me. I'm throwing up the South Florida Bullhorns, baby. I'm going with Rodney Adams. That's my guy for Mr. Mankato.
Okay, now Miles' behalf, what we'd have to shout out, Stacy Coley or was it R.J. Shelton?
R.J. Shelton
was Miles' guy. So, that's it for us today. As always, thank you for listening to the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Support the pod. Please, if you haven't already, hit us up with that that 5-star rating and leave us a nice review. Say something nice about Saxy Prince. Oh shoot! Before we get out of here, Saxy Prince, Nicodemus, what's going on with the show, man? They can't hear you on mute, man.
Oh, the show's going great. We just got to episode 6. Things are starting to ramp up. If you haven't been watching, I can definitely send you a link or whatever the case is. No surprises. I don't know if I'm actually able to release it just yet. I actually just got casted into a short film. And I'm actually really excited for this project. I can kind of officially announce that. I'm excited for the project. It's going to be something different than I've never done before. But it's definitely something, as I look to some of my the people that I admire in the acting business, it's definitely a role that I've wanted to take on. So, go watch Theater People, and
go watch Theater People. You can say you knew Yinka before it was cool to know Yinka. But that's it. That's all I got. JR, once again, thanks for coming out. Prince, thanks for mostly staying in one place while we recorded. Only dropped out once or twice.
Right.
And thank you. And thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. Y'all have a good one.